pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You say that pledge of allegiance so many times in so many different places, they all do a little different.
There she is. Ken Johnson will not be here tonight. Everyone else is here in Downport.
3 years of Latin.
Next item on our agenda is citizen input. Citizen input is on our agenda for those of you who are here to talk about something that isn't on the agenda, that however is the business of the council. Thank you. Item number one, approval of our agenda this evening.
Make that motion.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve our agenda. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number two, our consent agenda.
And I'll make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve our consent agenda. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number three, ordinance regarding residential vehicle storage. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Good evening. For the record, Gerald Piercy, city planner. Before you for consideration is a proposed ordinance, chapter 8.66, which as we discussed at your study session last week, will provide some additional requirements for residential parking within the city of Othello if adopted. I do have a short presentation that I'd like to make this evening just to kind of give you an indication of why we felt this was important to bring forward to the council and why some additional tools in our effort to provide enforcement activities is necessary. Before showing that presentation, though, I'd like to just bring your attention to the matrix that I handed out this evening to each of you. I believe it was requested at the study session that we provide a comparison between the existing code and the elements of the proposed chapter that would provide for additional enforcement elements within the code. Also, I want to correct something that I think I misspoke on at the study session, and that is that the intention of adopting chapter 8.66 is not to replace the existing code. It's to supplement the existing code. So those elements that are already contained in code would remain, and chapter 8.66 would provide some additional requirements that are specific to residential parking areas. So if I created any confusion in that presentation last week, I apologize for that. But I hope this helps provide some additional clarification as to the additional elements within those residential parking areas that the proposed ordinance would provide. I am just going to set this up very quickly, and then we'll get into the slide presentation.
Hey, Jay, can you catch lights?
And this sort of just moves along on its own here, so we'll I'll just talk as they're showing. But these are just, we took some of these pictures around town. You can see in this case where people have had to actually go over the curb. There's no curb cut, and are parking alongside the house in the side and backyard. In this case, this would also be the side yard because of the corner lot. Three cars here. We observed more cars than that in that location. In this location, there's a whole host of things going on. The little blue car behind the red car has flat tires. The car on the left has a trailer, but it's also sticking out just on the curb line and coming out over the right-of-way as well.
Can you pause it, Daryl?
Oh, I can. This is going a little fast. And here's a shot, same house, different angle. This is up the street just a little ways looking back. Number of cars in the driveway. Some appear to be operable, some appear not to be operable. And again, we have the car out on the curb right here in this location that has tires that are flat.
tires that are flat right over this area, and then back over here was where the car, the truck, and the trailer was parked, that had jumped the curb to be able to park there. In this case, we have a car that totally inoperable. The tires are flat on the rear. The top is actually missing on the car. Tires are stored coming out of the trunk lid, which isn't there. And there's some garbage stored there as well. And I'm going to stop this slide because in this one, I think it's an interesting situation that's happening. And we see this over all over town quite a bit. And this is just one example. Notice here we have the telephone equipment and transformer that are part of the underground system. That's within the right of way. So anything from that point to the curb line is actually the city right of way. But we have a trailer that's parked not only in the driveway, but from about that point on, midpoint of the trailer, it's in city right of way. But in this case, it actually sticks out into the travel area of the street. And if these cars weren't parked there, the tongue would literally be somewhere 7 to 8 feet out into the street area. And of course, we have the propane tanks out in that area, and if somebody were to just come cruising along the roadway, there's a good chance of someone actually striking that, not seeing the tongue, which is black, and causing perhaps an explosion with the propane tanks that are sitting there around, sticking out into the roadway. And that's pretty typical of some of the areas that we looked at in terms of how RVs are being parked. Not fully within the yards of the residents. Here, back-to-back backyards. Looks like an inoperable car here, parked right up against the house. These cars come and go. Oftentimes, there's several other cars in this location as well. This was too far to walk to the front door, so this became a very nice area for the car to park here. But plenty of room in the driveway for parking, and they share the parking lot or the driveway, which is kind of nice. Here, another situation, we're just using the backyard for a variety of vehicles, an RV, and a little trailer here in this location. This one is kind of fun because there's a series of cars that are parked alongside of the house. That's the house that they belong to. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cars you can see in this picture, plus a couple in the driveway. But as you go down the road just a little bit further, you see a longer line of these cars. And this is where you can see two before. There's about 4 more cars parked in that row in the back. So we're looking at a total of maybe 10 or 11 cars parked in this one residential spot. Here's one where oftentimes you see additional cars parked in this area, but you can see two of the vehicles have their hoods up. They're doing repair work of some sort, or else they're inoperable. Cars parked on the lawn, various forms of locations on that site. This one I'm going to pause because I wanted to just show that we're not just talking about a problem with aesthetics. If you think that we're dealing with parking issues just because we don't think it looks good, take a look at what's happening to this curb. Now that's city property. There was an expense that went into actually placing that curb there, and over time it's just going to be destroyed by people driving up over the curb. And that's becoming very apparent in many, many locations in the city where this kind of damage is taking place to city property, city land. And so we're not just talking about an issue of aesthetics, we're talking about physical damage and potential, as you saw earlier, some potential safety issues for the traveling public as a result of some of the parking situations in town. Again, here we have another one where it has a potential for a real safety issue. While we probably could repaint this curb yellow, the fact is that it's hard to miss the fire hydrant. Parked right adjacent to it, there's another car parked here, probably too close to the fire hydrant to be legal. It's questionable, maybe. But clearly, one or two things could happen when if there was an emergency at this site. Either the fire department would be looking for this hydrant because it's obscured coming down the street. You can't see it until you're past it. Or they wouldn't be able to get to it because cars would continue to park along this area as well. And it really could cause a problem for our fire personnel trying to locate that hydrant and then trying to connect to it. Again, this one, truck's been there obviously quite a long time. We've got a pretty good collection of weeds coming growing up around here. Again, plenty of room in the driveway, but it's just a closer walk if you park right next to the door in this location. And I think what we see, if we go by this house this time of the night, there's another car generally parked right here and a couple more in the driveway with one sticking out. So there's probably a reason why the car is on the grass is because at night, the whole area is completely full. And again, back to the beginning where we have the house with the cars jumping over the curb and parking in the yard. This is a representative sample of the kinds of things that we're seeing out in the neighborhoods. It happens in good neighborhoods, it happens in the older neighborhoods, it happens in brand new neighborhoods. It isn't something that's exclusive to any particular part of town. Where we have the newer part of town or the nicer neighborhoods, if you want to label them that, we have a lot of the incidences with the RVs and those sticking out into the roadways or into the right-of-way. So it isn't a problem that's unique to any specific area. It's a problem that really is across all sorts of neighborhoods within the city. As we look at the proposed Chapter 8.66, there is an attempt here to begin to create some regulation within these residential parking areas that help address some of those issues that you've seen. As you look down into the matrix of the comparison, the areas that really are not addressed in our current code deal with the limits on the number of RVs and the number of trailers that can park at a particular site. There's no provisions within the parking regulations currently for junk or inoperable vehicles. In order to enforce those, we have to identify them as a public nuisance, which is a tremendously more difficult process to go through from an enforcement standpoint to be able to make that kind of conclusion on an inoperable vehicle or a junk vehicle. There's no restrictions currently on parking commercial vehicles in neighborhoods that are over one ton. This proposed chapter would do that. Currently, you can park on vacant lots without any prohibition. If you own it or have permission from the owner, the proposed chapter again would prohibit that. Vehicle repair is not addressed in the current code. If you chose to replace your engine on the street, there's nothing in the current code that says you cannot do that. This would eliminate that loophole, provide for vehicle repair under certain circumstances, but would not allow it within the public right-of-way. And then I think in every situation where we provide regulations, we should provide an opportunity for someone to come to the council and say, my situation is unique or special. And so the new code that's proposed allows for a special permit to be obtained through the approval process in front of the council. And there are criteria that are identified within Chapter 8.66 that allows the council to be able to make exceptions to the rules that are adopted because we recognize that there are unique circumstances to every situation. And this allows you to recognize those unique circumstances and to make changes and allow for exceptions. And I think that's always important when we impose regulations so that they don't just automatically blanket and cover everyone. There are ways for someone to bring their issue to you and say, my situation is unique and here's why. Happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Questions? I'm sure there are.
I'll go first. I have issues. Halfway down about limits to RV or trailer parking, I'm assuming that's applying to boats?
Where the limit comes in is if the trailer is greater than 6 feet wide or 12 feet long, then the limits imposed within the chapter apply. If it's less than 6 feet wide and less than 12 feet long, then you can park them as you would a vehicle.
Well, I personally have no objection to somebody parking their boat on improved property on the front yard. And we discussed this before on the new neighborhoods to the south, where they only allow 5 feet to the property line, so houses can be 10 feet apart. There's no way without alleys or getting their boats to the backyard. And it was discussed at that time, because they can't park them on the street by our current code, they got nowhere to put them. And somebody parking their boat on their driveway doesn't bother me. The restrictions on commercial vehicles over 1 ton, not sure what that exactly refers to, but I got, this is a little bit specific on this point, but somebody had a 1 ton pickup and said that when he went to the Department of Licensing, if he pulled a trailer, he had to get that licensed for over 1 ton. So I don't know if the word commercial covers that detail.
I believe it does. Again, we're talking about using a vehicle that is clearly intended for commercial use. If it's a box delivery van or some other greater than 1 ton vehicle that has a raised appliance on the side of it, those are the kinds of uses that are intended to be prohibited through this.
I think what you're talking about is tonnage. They have to buy tonnage if they have a commercial truck, for instance. I don't know that a 1 ton qualify. I don't think a 1 ton. You have to buy tonnage for 1 ton. No.
Well, right there in that picture, you have a 1 ton pickup. Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't be allowed to park at his house.
I've got a 1 ton pickup. And I don't have to buy commercial. I pull a 6-horse trailer, and I do not have to buy commercial tonnage for that.
Yeah, it says over 1 ton.
For that vehicle.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to indicate.
A 1 ton pickup's fine.
And there's nothing to indicate on that truck that this is for commercial purposes either. That clearly is. There's no signage on it. There's no indication that it would be used for commercial purposes. It's a residential, domestic use vehicle, and that would be allowed.
I think that is in the ordinance to keep potato trucks, ten-wheel septic tanks, pumpers, out of the residential areas, and I think that's what that is. But to my knowledge, one ton vehicles, I've never had to buy tonnage for a 1 ton, and I pulled big trailers. I don't even have to stop at scales.
Right.
Yes.
My other issue is the driveway improved area can be no larger than 30 feet. I'm wondering about a curved driveway that comes up and through the house and back down along with the regular driveway. Does this language prohibit that?
No. The width of a driveway is from edge to edge, and if it curves around and you have a circular driveway, it can be 30 feet wide all the way around the park.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I think just to address the issue of the boat trailer, you are allowed one. You can have up to 3 vehicles. One of those could be out of the class that's identified. I believe it's in paragraph B. So the boat trailer could be allowed if it's on an improved surface.
Or a camper trailer. If he had room to put that back up against his garage or back it up to where it did not create a safety hazard, visual safety hazard.
If it was an improved surface and was back outside of the right of way, city right of way, then you could have one of those. You can't have a boat and an RV. You can't have a trailer with snowmobiles that's 18 feet long and an RV or a motorhome, but you can have one. And the rest have to be in the backyard or side yard.
Okay, I mean, here it says no trailer in front yard longer than 24 hours. So is there other language that says I can park a boat in my front yard?
B3.
Does that seem conflicting to you, or is it just me?
I think if you go to B3,
bingo.
You have up to 3 vehicles. And you can have, as long as one of those are RVs or your trailers or boats, you can have one of those in, on the improved surface.
Could you leave it there indefinitely?
Indefinitely.
And I personally think there should be a limit as to how many can be in a backyard on improved surfaces or whatever. I don't want our backyards in this community to be junkyards.
Again, keeping in mind that they have to be fully obscured. So right. If we go back to the one where we saw the backyard with the inoperable car and the three in the other backyard, the chain link fence, that wouldn't qualify under this code as it's proposed. It would have to be a sight obscuring fence. Most of the time when you see vehicles stored in the backyard of that nature, they put them in a building to be sight obscuring, but it's not required under the code. There is some flexibility allowed. As long as it's an improved surface and as long as it's in a sight obscuring fence, then I guess out of sight, out of mind, if your neighbors, the idea is to try to protect some visual aspects of your neighbor's backyard. And whether there's one junk car there, or, I won't say junk car because they're not allowed, but one vehicle or three vehicles there, if it's out of sight, it's not going to have that impact on the neighboring property.
So you're saying if I have a vehicle in the backyard and it's in junk or inoperable, then that's
You're not allowed to store inoperable or junk vehicles by definition. And so even if those are in the backyard and we are aware of it, that those are in the backyard, you're in violation of the code, and we would take enforcement action.
I didn't go looking for things like this, but I spent a little over an hour today driving around town, primarily looking for alleys. And there's a lot of areas in town have alleys, but there are some that don't. And what I find in areas that don't have alleys is that they put houses in that are 5 feet from each side. And the guy's 5 feet the other way, so they have no access to the backyard. There's no alley, can't get to the backyard, couldn't put anything back there unless they can share a driveway and a fence that they can open. So they're really stuck with anything under those kind of circumstances. The other thing I noticed was that in the areas where there were alleys, probably 70% of the homes or better have fences, most of those being wooden fences. The problem is, you can see through some of them because they've been there for 100 years. And I found a lot of places that look a lot worse than what this is in the backyard, where there was, two, three, four vehicles, junk. There are several of them that were just nothing but fire hazards waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody go by and throw a cigarette in, and we got a big time major fire in the backyard. And I don't know what you do about that, but my other question is, what is an acceptable surface? It says gravel. Several of the yards don't have grass or anything. I mean, dirt.
Yeah. Let me see if I can go down the list. In terms of those that have a bunch of vehicles in the backyard now and they have a wood fence around them, but you can see through them, then under the current code, there's not a lot we can do because we have to identify those vehicles as a nuisance. And that's a pretty difficult threshold to cross. Under the proposed chapter that's before you for consideration, if the fence is not sight obscuring, in other words, if we can see them, then they're in violation of the code if they're junked up or inoperable vehicles. So if the neighbor can see them from his yard and they call us and we come out and look, or we drive by and we can see them from the alley, that's a violation and we can take action under this code, whereas we couldn't under the current code. So I think that will address the concern that you have in regards to those that are in the backyards. And I'm trying to remember now the second part of your question. I apologize.
Some of it was the fact there are no alleys and people have no access to the backyard. And so that leaves them really stuck with what's in the front yard. And then it says, I don't remember just which one it says you have a driveway that goes to the back or something like that. It has to be adjacent to an existing driveway. So if it's adjacent to an existing driveway, then you have 5 feet because most of the driveways are, the garage, and so then you get extra 5 feet. So that would leave, you wouldn't even have the 30 feet that's required in here.
Well, as council member, and 30 feet's the maximum, it's not the minimum. So you if you did something in conjunction with your neighbor, you probably could get to each other's backyard. But the reality is, with the way new development takes place in some some situations, it just may not be possible to store vehicles, boats, RVs in a backyard or a side yard. And quite frankly, as council members, you have the choice to make. Are you going to decide that it's just unacceptable to have this issue and appearance in the front yards? And if you choose to buy a house with those kind of limitations, do you store your RV off-site? And frankly, that's why there's been such a market for mini storage facilities, is because most communities have those kind of prohibitions, especially as lots get smaller and smaller and smaller. There just simply is no longer room to store motorhomes, boat trailers, RVs of any type, snowmobile sleds, our trailers. Those go to an off-site storage facility, and that's why those are being built, and that's why they're very successful. And this may require some people to do that. And that's the choice as a council you would make for the citizens of your community. If you want to have this work for everyone in the city, and that means some people are going to have to store their toys off-site, or is it something that, you know, what we see here currently taking place, is that an acceptable situation? And that's your choice to make.
The last part of Dan's question was, you see grass and you just see dirt?
Oh yes, improved surface, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Improved surface means that you need to take some action to make it a hardened surface, whether it's gravel, whether it's blacktop, whether it's concrete, but native earth, grass material, vegetation is not considered an improved surface.
I think I saw Mr. Whitaker kind of biting his tongue over there once.
No, that was about the 30 feet.
Okay.
Because that also answered part of the other question. If it's in the front yard, please remember that the proposed ordinance requires it to be concrete like the driveway, mm-hmm. or asphalt, yeah. if they have a blacktop driveway, or they could put down pavers, bricks, or similar hard surface interlocking devices. When you get to the side yard and the backyard, then you can go to the gravel and crushed rock if you need an approved surface. And I mean, to, I guess, follow up on Daryl's point, my neighbor is spending about $10,000 right now to create a storage place for his outfit about the size of the one in that picture that he just bought, so that he has a place to store it in his backyard. And then he's excavated out and he's building a retaining wall and a pad, and it accesses off of his driveway, and he will pull his trailer in there so that he doesn't park it on the street or anywhere out front.
This particular example here doesn't have anything to do with appearance. It's all safety. Those propane tanks are out into the street. Looks like he had some room. He could have backed it up maybe a little further, but maybe there's something there.
What doesn't show really well in the picture is behind the trailer is another trailer that has I believe it has snowmobiles or motorcycles on it. So he's got one trailer parked back up against the fence that leads to the backyard, and then he has the travel trailer in front of that, and he just simply could not get that back any farther with the two trailers that are located there. Had he just had one trailer, and that would be allowed under our code, that would have been able to go all the way back and be out of the right of way.
He'd be just fine then.
Yep. It looked that way, just the quick drive-by, that there was plenty of room there for a single trailer.
I think Council, Eleanor, you might remember, I remember this several years ago, we talked about the RV thing and being off of the right-of-way.
We had a committee, I was going to ask you, Dale Wyman. So we should already have something on the books.
We do.
For the RVs,
so,
and the trailers.
Why wouldn't we enforce that instead of changing?
Well, I believe there's a provision on the books that prohibit parking RVs on the city right-of-way. So
yeah.
this probably is a violation under the current code. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty is that the enforcement elements in the current code are a bit more difficult to actually put your arms around and go forward with them. And they're just difficult to enforce. And I think what we've had in the city is an experience of several years of trying to enforce those and not having a great deal of success because of some of the vagueness and some of the other issues associated with it. I believe that the language that's before you for consideration closes a lot of those ambiguities in the code and creates a more defined process in which to look at the situation, make the determination, is it a violation or not,
and then move forward with enforcement action. But I think you're absolutely right that you could go after this in code currently if you wanted to.
I was also thinking at the time that we did that, and I have designated driveway and improved parking surface that back then, that you could have gravel in the front yard.
And I think even with this ordinance, you can have gravel, concrete, asphalt, as long as it's a prepared surface. But I think in last time we visited this, we included grass.
Can't have gravel then, in the front yard and say.
Mm-hmm. Because it's in two different places. A, it says gravel. You go down to C, but not in front yard. So are we in conflict there?
I don't believe so. I think you're talking about two different circumstances. And if you look at that, here's how I'm reading that. You can have, you have a concrete drive or a hard surface drive that's your driveway, kind of the traditional area from the street to your garage door. And then off to the side of that, where this is actually parked, you could have a graveled improved surface for the parking of the RV, that third vehicle that's allowed. So you could do that. That, in essence, puts it in the side yard. So you could do the gravel for the RV. So I think you're all reading it correctly, but you have to read the correct portions. That driveway from the road to the garage door, the main driveway that you would build with your house, is hard surface, concrete, blacktop, pavers, woodwork. But you can have an improved gravel area off to the side of that if you choose to.
And then you'd have to have a curb cut so that you would not drive up and over the curb. The safety issues and driving over the curbs and destroying the curbs, there's an awful lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of money that's going to have to be spent in the city over the next 4 or 5 years just repairing those curbs.
Well, I think what we're seeing is that there's probably, the more it gets used, there's an acceleration of that damage occurring. There's some areas now where you really would not even recognize that a curb exists. It's literally worn down and crumbled away to the point where it just looks like the road goes into the grass and there's no curb line there left. The example we showed you in these photographs was one that we wanted to show you that there is damage occurring and that would continue over time and eventually that curb would be gone. And that's what we're seeing happen.
So I guess I need to know, how do you define the front yard and the side yard then? If that is not the front yard, why would that be the side yard? To me, the side yard would be from the front of the house back.
Well, keep in mind that this is parked in the right of way. So if you take this line and kind of extend it down, it goes to about where the air conditioning unit is on that, and then there's another trailer here that extends behind past the house. In order to get this trailer outside of the right-of-way, you're literally placing a good portion of that behind the house into the side yard. And that's why you can do the gravel portion over there. That's why we call it the side yard. But you're right. This is the front yard. And the main driveway that goes from the roadway to the, what probably was a garage, needs to be hard surface. But there is an exception in the code that, as proposed, it specifically allows for this RV parking area off to the edge of that driveway to be a gravel surface.
Dan, didn't you park your RV off the side of your house last summer?
Yes.
And it's got a graveled area. Is it a graveled area?
Yeah, it's been graveled.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there's about 8 feet on that side of the house, plus the neighbor has about another 7 or 8 feet. So there was plenty of room there. I hung over into his lot a little bit. But it was 32 feet long, and I got it in there so that the tongue or the front of the fifth wheel was behind the shrub at the corner. So it actually was at a side yard, but not close to the garage. But it worked, and it had been graveled, and I think it had been done for that purpose primarily. But I did move it and put it in the front because I was going to sell it. And I left it out there. Now the overhang from the fifth wheel hung over the city right away. You know, probably by about
No. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But
say someone came walking along on city right-of-way and hit their head on your connection for that fifth wheel, the city probably could find themselves liable for that.
Yeah. If I may comment on the service thing. The way this has been interpreted is, if you read what a driveway can be, the gravel reflects that in certain older portions of towns, people didn't have concrete driveways necessarily. So when you talk about the improved parking surface, and then it can be these things, or it can be gravel or crushed rock. It can be gravel in the front yard if your driveway is gravel. If your driveway is not gravel, then it's one of the other things. It's the brick, the pavers, the asphalt, or the concrete. That's what that was intended to deal with, is to reflect that some people's driveways were literally gravel. And if my driveway was gravel and I wanted to go ahead and make it 30 feet wide, I could just add more gravel as long as it was the 2 inches thick and compacted and put in place.
So that's there are several of those as I drove around town. There are several of those in town. Sure, in the older sections of town.
It doesn't. That's very common. The concrete driveway is more of a 1960s and on kind of a thing.
There are several up here that run the full length of the alley. Gravel.
Anyway, I just was letting you know that that's how that's been interpreted other places that has this. Is that
Could we go to the residence that has numerous vehicles, maybe the Pine Street? You know, the backyard, we were talking about, Dan brought up backyards. Mm-hmm. The city ran into the same issues on the Mitchick property, I think, and it ended up being a real safety hazard. I mean, it was dangerous in their backyard.
City removed 6 cars from that property.
Right.
There's a motorhome and a car there now.
Sorry?
There's a motorhome and a car there now.
Okay. Now, in reference to Mark's question, what is the side yard and what is the front yard here? You know, it's obvious that they're having to jump 2 of those vehicles up over the curb there behind the dumpster.
So the side yard, to me the side yard would be from the fence back.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Where that downspout comes down.
Sides are half on his property, half on the other property of the house.
This would be the start of the side yard.
Yeah, but you said that motorhome on the other picture could be on a gravel surface because it was in the side yard.
Yeah, but if it was parked appropriately, if the other trailer was gone and that was moved all the way back, it would be in the side yard.
If they had the curb cut here and they had that graveled and they could put a trailer in there or a vehicle to where they were off the city right away, then according to this, that would be legal. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, where the little red car is. Basically be the space you have.
Basically the red car, if that was gravel 2 inches thick, and the red car would be legal there, as long as it was not a...
The only situation you have here, I suspect that the red car and this car are half of them on your neighbor's property. Because it looks to me like somewhere right in here is the separation between the property 5 feet on each side.
Right.
So I suspect that they're actually parking on part of their neighbor's property.
Well, that red car belongs to the house on the right, and those other ones. I drive by it every day. So.
Is that for us to enforce?
That would be a property issue between neighbors.
Yes, it would be.
So if the neighbor agreed, if they were parked down a property line, that's okay.
Sure. It's approved appropriate.
Sure. Now remember, in this one, I'm seeing 2 concrete driveways, so they would need to paver, brick, or asphalt the space in between.
The side
this
yard.
This is one where they, where from the fence out, they would need to keep it in something other than gravel or crushed rock because they have hard surface driveways.
Now I'm totally lost because on that Winnebago or that travel trailer, I understood you to say that if it was gravel next to that parking next to that concrete driveway, it would be okay.
Because it was going to sit back behind the edge of the house. If you take out the other travel, take out the snowmobile trailer and put it back, it's going to fit back there.
So it'll be beside the house?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I think me and Mark were trying to get to.
We'll actually go back this side of the house along that tree line where there's another trailer, and then back at the rear of that house is a fence. So they actually could take it all the way back to the full length of the house on the side.
So there's no fire issues parking trailers or RVs within a foot of the house?
It's a living unit, which is allowed under our code.
Well, this is kind of my question, you know, we're talking about gravel versus concrete or whatever. You know, you get a runoff from asphalt or concrete, but when you put gravel in, you're going to have the same leaching problem as you would if you didn't have any gravel in there in the first place, technically.
Actually, the Department of Ecology has done some studies on impervious surfaces, whether it's concrete or blacktop or gravel. And what they found was that the runoff from compacted gravel, hard surface gravel, is almost 95% of that of blacktop or concrete. And in fact, some of the blacktop that's designed now is actually designed to allow for percolation through the blacktop, and it actually drains more than compacted gravel.
The key word there is compacted.
Yes.
So people that have, let's say, chain link fences in their backyard right now, are they grandfathered in, or do they have to do something about that?
Well, if you pass the ordinance 5 days from the adoption of the ordinance, the requirements will take effect. And just because they have vehicles parked there today does not mean that they can continue to allow them to be parked there after the ordinance takes effect. We would, of course, give reasonable notice that they're in violation, but the ones we saw in that picture would receive some notice from the city that they're in violation of the code as it's now adopted.
So if they slide fabric through their fence, I have that on my chain link fence, that would take care of the issue.
It's pretty difficult, actually, to make a chain link fence sight obscuring, simply because no matter how you put slats through it, you always have that one little bit of gap that you see through, and as you drive by at 25 miles an hour, it just the effect of like a strobe light actually allows you to see through that fence. And so it's almost impossible to make a chain link fence sight obscuring unless you put solid fabric along the inside, which I've seen them do at pools and other facilities, but not just the slats that you see from time to time that people put in those fences, because that's not sight obscuring.
Yeah, I guess I'll let the council know what my take is here. 95% of the people in this community don't park on the grass, don't drive up over the curbs. There's probably 5% that do. Those 95% are probably irritated by their neighbors doing that, obviously, but the one guy that has the red car and the other car, they must get along okay. To me, those people that do have a prepared driveway and park on it and have neighbors that don't, the people that do have an investment in that home, and I think by allowing people to park 8 or 9 or 10 vehicles on their driveway or on their grass, diminishes their property values. You don't see that in a lot of our areas in town. There are areas that nobody's parking on the grass. And I'd like to probably disagree with you. I think the older part of town, there's more of that. And but I know that north of the park, you don't see that. You don't see it in the Roberts Edition or Town and Country. I think it's limited to certain areas that are more abusive than others. And so I think to be fair to those who do and those that don't, we need to reach some common ground here and, try to hold a high standard here in our community to appease both sides.
So if this ordinance passes, like, I've got a gravel surface in my front yard. I have my driveway and then a gravel surface.
and I have three cars. I park one in the garage, I park one in the driveway, and then I pull my pickup into the gravel every night. So that way, the vehicle in the garage, I can get out, because I don't take my pickup everywhere because of the gas plant, they'll take my car. Plus it's a little warmer to get into and all that. And if this passes, that means that I would have to spend a lot of money to put concrete in there. And I don't think it's fair to anybody else in town that would have to do the same thing.
You could, if that is an issue, you could make it clear, we can make a little change in here, that gravel can be used in the front yard.
I thought that's the way it was going to be. There was three acceptable surfaces, blacktop, well, actually four, brick, blacktop, concrete, and gravel. And I guess just the parking on the lawns is the issue here, and driving up, jumping up over the curbs. I think gravel should be compacted gravel.
Can we just take the people for that, though, Shannon?
Excluding your main driveway or an existing gravel driveway. You'd have to put that in there too, I think, wouldn't you?
Well, all I would propose is that when you come to an improved parking surface, it just means concrete, asphalt, pavers, brick, gravel, crushed rock, or similar surface. Period.
See, right now, grass is okay. That's not a prepared surface, though. And I think that's the whole issue here tonight.
Well,
go ahead, Bonnie. Do you want to come up and, yeah.
I'm Bonnie Valdez, and I'm here just as a citizen of this town. First, I want to thank you for your service here, and I know some of you won't be coming back after the elections, and so I hope you'll continue to be a voice for our community. I'm concerned with the restrictions to be placed on city residents by this ordinance. After reading it in its entirety, I feel that this ordinance is too restrictive as to how and where citizens park their vehicles, restricting the number and kinds of vehicles to be parked, and restricts the homeowners to the kinds of surfaces they can park on, even in their own backyards. I understand we want our city to look nice and to be a place where people want to come, and therefore the restrictions on the front yard. I can understand that. I have no driveway in my front yard. I have alley access to a garage that I can't use anyway. But for other people, some do have the alley access. But what concerns me is the restrictions of our own backyards. We pay property taxes. We live in this town. We own the property. We need to be able to do some things on our own in our backyard. An improved surface seems unnecessary to me. And it also seems a hardship in cost to have to change fencing in an alley. Alleys were meant for servicing, and that's what they're there for. So, to restrict what's in our own backyards, as long as there's no illegal activity going on, if there needs to be an ordinance regarding junk vehicles, I believe there is already something on the books for that, so that should not be addressed in this ordinance. And as you've all had the discussion already on the gravel and all this, so I'll skip that part. The other concern I have is that there's actually no mention of parking in the wintertime with our snow. The plows come through very early in the morning. A lot of times I hear them out 5-6 o'clock at my house, and if in the winter we've had the habit of parking up to 4 cars on our front yard. And I mean, we shovel the grass, we shovel the little sidewalk, and we park our cars up there so that we don't get plowed in. That snow gets very heavy, and if we have to dig out every car for everyone who needs to be to work or elderly people, there's not enough volunteers in this town to get that done. And I'm certainly getting to the point where shoveling heavy snow doesn't do me a bit of good for a day. So those are some things that I'd like to also see addressed in here. What we do about parking in the wintertime. We have two vehicles. It's not really a problem for us now, but I'm sure it could be if we were forced to park out on the road, get snowed in, and have to shovel ourselves out, get plowed in by the plows, whatever. There's a lot of older people in this town that can't do that. And then the area of the chain link fence, we have a nice chain link fence that we put up to keep our animals in. And it would be very cost prohibitive to go ahead and have to take that fence down and put up something in the way of lumber or something that costs an arm and a leg. And if you know what vinyl fencing costs, that's even worse. So until these issues are resolved and addressed, I would urge you not to pass this ordinance as it stands. Thank you for your time.
Any council have any comments?
I think I understand Bonnie's point about control. Having lived in a community where I found a really nice screen door that was, I paid I think $300 and some for it, and I put it on, and a week later I got a nasty letter from the homeowners association that I didn't ask them if I could change out the screen door that they had put on when it was built. It's really difficult sometimes when you have those kinds of things, and I understand where you're coming from with that. The control issue.
Dan, that's a covenant. That was a covenant from the homeowners association.
It was a homeowners association, but at the same time, when you talk about okay, you can have X amount of cars, you can have X amount of grass, you can only have so much gravel, you can have in the backyard. You're getting toward those kind of issues, and I think that's where she's coming from. But I, after having driven through the area, and like I said, a lot of the fences are wood. The ones that aren't, the backyard is a fire hazard so many times. And so I think we have to do something about that. I just, if you put up a fence though, and if, then it's a fire hazard and nobody can see it. So. I don't know, it's a hard decision, but I think there needs to be
some restrictions to backyard, and I think that if you've got six old cars sitting in your backyard and your neighbor, I think you owe it to your neighbor to he has a right to go out in his backyard and enjoy his backyard without looking at a backyard full of junk cars and old cars. And so we need to have some restrictions in the backyard. I mean, it was obvious on the abatement on the Mitchick property that that was a safety issue, and we did haul off six cars, hauled them out to a location out of town.
In the county, yeah.
For them, yeah.
Do we have a junk field? We do have a junk field ordinance, right?
Yes,
we do. So why couldn't we use that if we have a problem with vehicles? And I do think it's a hardship for families when you have a chain link fence going to a wood fence. That is a hardship. The other thing that I was concerned about, in my own place, I have a boat, and it sits in the front. I also have a trailer. It sits on the side. Both of them, of course, are paved because I'm in a different area. Would I be in violation? Because I have, one of them is on the side. There's a fence, but you can clearly see back on that. It is a concrete surface. But I have a boat and a trailer at times, both at my property.
You wouldn't be in violation. You're on an approved surface.
So if you had your motorhome or a camper in the backyard, but you only have, by law, we can only have a 6-foot fence. But
right.
You can still see that camper when you drive by. Is that in violation?
No.
Okay.
I think we need to clean this up, and I think we need to have a little bit more time for us council members to go out and look at the community where there isn't places that people have parking areas in their front yard.
And if I may, to answer your question about the enforcement of the junk vehicles,
yeah.
Please understand the state basically controls how that begins. And we have to prove it's got to be not licensed, not working, missing a motor transmission or other parts that make it run. It can be missing lights.
The value has to be
no more than its salvage value. I mean, those are, from a nuisance enforcement point of view, those are difficult to enforce. And I'll tell you what one other community did with the issue. You talk about people seeing, we always hear the story, men seem to want to collect cars, usually from their youth, and usually not all in one piece. And they are always keeping them in their backyards because someday, miraculously, they're going to become mechanically inclined to go out and fix all these cars. So what that community did is they could have them in the backyard, but they had to get one of those little portable the little car shelter, so the neighbors didn't have to enjoy the car while they were getting around to work on it. That was their compromise, is that they allowed people to cover them up with another. They didn't have to build a garage. They could go get a much more reasonably priced device to hold their treasure until they got around to working on it. So that's one compromise that has been worked out other places.
And I think that holds true in some of these particular areas. I know there's some of them that are actually an antique. I mean, you can say an old car, you can say a junk car, but there is antiques too that are around. Maybe they don't run either, but they are an antique. And so I think you've got to make a compromise there a little bit on that particular thing. If you've got something out there that's totally junk, yeah, I can see. Let's get rid of it.
Yeah, but what is junk to one person is treasure to another. Now, I guess there's...
So where are you going to go?
So there lies the problem.
Yeah.
I think, if I'm hearing counsel right, maybe we need to simplify this a little bit, address the... I think everybody's in agreement, even people in the audience here tonight, that the front yard issue... based on the pictures that was shown here, there's dozens and dozens and dozens more of those just like that. And we certainly need to, because of deterioration of the curb, safety issues, and other people, other neighbors adjacent to them, protecting their property values, I think the gravel, the prepared surface, the asphalt, the concrete, the brick, or the gravel, but we need to maybe simplify it just a little bit and maybe address the backyard issue. I think that's where everybody wants to kind of...
Jim, I would like you to clean up that number C a little bit and add what you put in where it says not in the front yard. I want that.
Oh, yeah. No, that would, as I said, we'll simply make it say such as concrete, asphalt, pavers, brick, gravel, crushed rock, or similar surface, strike out the remainder of the second sentence. That way there's no doubt of what is an approved surface anywhere that they use it. And if I'm hearing the mayor right, we want to get back into the part about seeing inoperable vehicles, that they don't have to be in structures, that they might be in sight-obscuring containers.
Could,
if people want to put them in those.
Could we do this? Could we... do this in two different ordinances? I mean, the same ordinance, but do it in two different phases. One is as a front yard, clean that area up, and then use your side yards and your backyard as a addition to that ordinance. But go ahead and get work on that portion of it, get that portion of it cleared up.
However the council wants to do it, then.
I think the front and the side yard should be together and the backyard be separate.
However, but
yeah.
At least we could... the issue that we've got right now, we could get that on the books and get going, then we could work on that rear yard.
And Councilman Brodahl does have a point. We have an ordinance, a backyard ordinance and a junk yard ordinance. And I guess my concern right now, the most alarming thing that I've heard here tonight is for those that have a good chain link fence up, having to put up tear that fence down and put up another fence. I think we need to work through that part. That shouldn't be. I don't think that should be. I think that we have junk vehicle and safety ordinances and things in place to where we can, if that particular yard starts to be a place for junk cars, we can pull a trigger on an ordinance that would get those cars out of there. So I think we could.
We have that, and then the other one where they showed with the fire hydrant. That's a safety issue. Somebody should have been out there already, you know, addressing any of those issues. We have
We've got a lot. Yeah, we've got a lot of that. And those cars down here that are jumped onto the are parked on their property, on the right of way, and down into the street. Those are issues that we can enforce through code. Well, let's see if we can't simplify it just a little bit, clean it up, and. Maybe, is there any merit to discussing the front yard and the side yard? Or do you want to include the backyard? Maybe take some time and include the...
I'd rather see Daryl clean up for the front yard primarily, which is really safety and site issues and the those sort of things. What we do, if we try and do it here, we're kind of shooting from the hip. So I'd rather have him put together something reasonable and well thought out, and then come back with it. And then we can deal with the backyard at another time. And the side yard, maybe you'd want to do that too, I don't know. But if you could put the front and the side yard together in one and then worry about the backyard later, I'd rather see that happen myself.
Can you do that, Daryl?
Sure.
Okay. Let's simplify the prepared surfaces for the front and the side yards, and for sure, curb cuts. I mean, the side yard can't be jumping up over the curb. They need to have that curb cut all the way across if they're going to park a vehicle there, whether it be a motorhome or a boat or a car. Thank you, Daryl. Item number four, traffic flow on Pine and Cedar Streets. Jay?
Good evening. I thought we'd bring some information to you tonight regarding the stop sign configurations at Cedar and 2nd, Cedar 3rd, Pine 2nd, and Pine and 3rd Avenue. Kind of what I'll show you right now is what the current configurations are in this area. Right now in these areas, we're talking about these four intersections here, 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 and here. And currently, all north and south traffic is stopped at these intersections. And there's been some concerns from citizens about cars traveling through here and bypassing Main Street and such. And you can see how that can happen. Here at First Avenue, there is stop signs here. But then it's free flow all the way to 4th Avenue, where it stops again. And this isn't consistent with this area. Basically what we're looking at is 4th Avenue is through, 1st Avenue is through, and here you have stop signs that are this way. So what we did is went and looked at this, and the chief brought up his Spillman reports and determined over the last 2 years that there hasn't been any accidents at these intersections, but there has been several complaints of cars speeding through here and using this as opposed to Main Street for travel, so they're not hitting all the stoplights. So what we've determined, looked at the code book and everything else, and there is no code on stop signs, only on speed limits that take a council action, and they're now want to take these stop signs and switch them to just the opposite. What this would do here, you can see through all the fingerprints, is stop Cedar Street at 2nd, 3rd, and then the way it is now currently at 4th. And this will discourage cars from using this as a thoroughfare as opposed to Main Street with a little more control, and be more consistent with the area of cars running north and south.
Residents, I take that a step further. Residents,
yes.
Behind... Commercial Tire and the other street. They are under the impression that the reason this was done is back when City Hall and the police station was on, was to the west end there, that it allowed them to get down the street quicker for, or for whatever purpose.
I'm gonna switch these so you can see.
Yeah, go back to the other way. Consequently, now they're, and I should have probably contacted, there's a group that's been calling me for about a year, year and a half, that saying, you know, we need to get this back to where it's consistent with the rest of town, because they get a lot of people avoiding Main Street that are maybe under the influence or speeding or whatever, and they to try, they don't go up Main Street, they go up their residential streets, and they go up after hours fast, and it's just kind of a concern for them. So they wanted to be considered to put the stop signs north and south like it is on pretty much the rest of town, to see if they could slow that traffic down in front of their homes.
Mm-hmm. One question here. We talk about the rest of the town. You take, flip that over on the other side of Main Street, and that's the way it is. Our east-west ones are the straight-through ones, and the north-south ones are the stop signs. Mm-hmm.
But on this end of town, on this side of town, it's the other way around.
Now I have another question. On Cedar Street, in the wintertime, you stop that one on 2nd Avenue there, and you're either going to have to sand that one, or you're going to have a lot of plugged up traffic right there.
Currently, right now, this is one of our streets that does, just to clarify, we do not use sand. We use salt everywhere within. Okay. This is one of our main areas that does receive salt.
And another issue, how much added time is that going to take to our city public works, from the time they leave public works up and down that street about 20 times a day? That's 30 minutes off of our work schedule.
We'll have to go down Main Street now.
You have to go down Main.
We do use it.
I don't.
I'm not catching on here. Give me a landmark.
Whoa.
I don't even know.
Okay, right here, this is First Avenue. Here is the library.
Okay.
It appears there were, right there is where the old police station and the city hall used to be.
So if I'm at First and Cedar and head up Cedar, don't I have to stop there?
Not currently. No. Right now you can leave First Avenue on Cedar, headed east, and you do not stop until 4th Avenue is your next stop sign.
And that's where they say that the traffic really gets to rolling, both on Cedar and the next street north.
And Pines is the same way.
The citizens that live on Cedar, basically I've had like 6 or 7 of them, and they've got a group together, and they're petitioning that we change those stop signs to go north and south instead of, or north and south, no, east and west instead of north and south.
You want to stop east and west traffic and change the
slow
north
it down
and south
a little
routes.
Bit.
Yes, north and south routes be open.
So are you telling us or asking us?
This is informational.
Basically it is. I asked him to bring this up at a workshop, because the group of homeowners that live on Pine and Cedar would like to come and talk to you about this.
Okay.
But it is just informational.
The stop time didn't change?
Where I live up here, Hemlock is a through street, and then you get Juniper, and then you get Ash. And they're about 3 blocks apart. And going up, you have 1st, 4th, 7th, 11th, and 14th. So you got about 4 blocks in there, any place you go, where you're gonna have to stop pretty soon anyway. And I tend to avoid Main Street as much as I can. I come down Hemlock. I know I have to stop. So that doing that would be exactly the opposite of what the rest of the town is. So now you have, if I do up here, then I get down there and I'd be, I tend to go up First anyway until I get to past A&L Supply. I have to stop there. Mm-hmm. and I go up a block and go over so I can get to Coventry House.
This side of town is this way until you get to a fourth, right? Or
this is fourth.
Yeah, up there with the old city, yeah.
Fourth is through.
That's the first stop.
Fourth.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Fourth.
First, fourth, seventh.
But what we wanted to do here tonight is just bring this up, and then at our next workshop, there's a group of residents that would like to come in and talk to you about this, and in the papers, we might even bring some more people in that might have a different idea too. But it was just an idea that they presented to us.
Correct.
Item number five, sports field lighting.
You get to make a decision on this one, Mark.
Okay, for the 2009 budget, council appropriated $75,000 to install ball field lighting on the northwest field baseball diamond in Lions Park. But we'd also been directed to look for grant monies for this project before we spend any money on it. What we did is we searched, and there is no grant money available due to the shortage in the state budget. During the budget process for 2010, which we're in the middle of right now, we were asked to look at also lighting the other field that isn't lit there, which would be the southeast field of this. And another suggestion was made that we also light the newly constructed basketball court, which isn't lit at this point in time. So we'd just like to take this opportunity to ask council if we could, if this is what they wish to do, if we can roll the $75,000 over into the 2010 budget, include, add an additional $90,000 for the southeast field, and an additional $10,000 for the basketball court, and make this one project. It's basically would be about the same thing that we did with the sport courts this year in overlays. We combined the projects, and that one estimated to save us approximately $80,000. And we're looking to do the same thing again this next year if this is what council wishes to do. So we could either add these monies and budget for 2010, make it one project, or not do so and finish the northwest field this year. Do we have any
questions? Does the northwest field already have lights?
The northwest field isn't lit.
It has the old wood poles,
right,
just lighting the infield.
Correct. Well, no, because the infield, yes, okay, you're right. We did put the fence on that and on that field when we did the original lighting project, and the southwest field and the northeast fields were lit with the new Musco lighting.
How come the new field is so much, $15,000 more?
$75,000 budgeted might not make it a complete project. It's over $50,000 alone in just parts, and then there is additional parts for underground wiring and power service. So the additional $15,000 added on to the southeast field with the $75,000 we're looking at, is that's our estimate right now to be able to complete both of these projects. There's the potential of coming back to council more probable than not asking for more money just to do the one project this year.
Because I thought the $75,000 was good because both those fields have the poles along the side that are ready for lights.
Correct, but after looking at the parts that it's going to take to fit those infield poles with the new lights and then the outfield poles, it takes the majority of that $75,000 already.
And just to be clear, so we're on the same page, the south east field does currently have lights. They're the old wooden pole, 40-year-old, I don't even know what they are, lower lower lights. They're nothing like the new ones.
And the intention here is to update all four fields.
Right.
To the newer lighting.
Correct.
And that's, I guess I should have explained that the northeast and the southwest fields are current and new lighting. The opposite two are not.
So basically, set up fees just like our overlay deal. You're thinking that we can get more bang for our buck doing it this way?
As opposed to doing one project this year and then the mobilizations, the bid process, the engineering again, back-to-back years.
Yes. Dave, yes. I'm confused because I also thought we had Kiwanis slated in there with some lighting.
Okay, that's going to be that's a possibility also.
For 2010.
Excuse me.
For 2010, isn't that what we?
Correct. Just, we're going to be bringing that back along with the cameras in Kiwanis Park also on the 26th for budgeting purposes.
I'm just wondering why we wouldn't have all the lighting in one.
That's something we could do because then
well,
again,
I think Eleanor that the sports lighting is quite a bit different than if you want to put in more street lights. I mean, this sports lighting is pretty specific. I don't think you want a light like this. I guess you could. I mean, it would literally illuminate all of Kiwanis Park, one of these posts.
As far as a project goes, you can combine the two projects. But the reason this is being separated out right now is because we are looking at one manufacturer for this lighting project here. And that's where we would actually purchase the equipment as a city. Then we would go out to bid for a contractor to do the installation. And the installation portions could be Kiwanis Park and Lions Park also.
Yeah, I thought that was my misinterpretation because I thought this Musco company that makes the lights also for warranty purposes came in and did the installation.
No, we actually, last time we purchased the equipment and hired a contractor to do it through the bid process.
Okay.
But go ahead, Ken.
Well, it looks to me as late as it's getting in the year, I think it'd be feasible to step that back 1 year because we're probably not going to use them that much for the rest of the year anyway. And if we would tie these all together, if we're more or less kind of agreeable to do this again next year, tie these projects all in one, and I'm sure that we can, like you say, get more bang for your buck. We get one contractor do it all at one time rather than two different phases of it, and we might get a better deal on the overall lighting as well by actually buying more lights and whatnot. So my suggestion would just add it on to next year's budget, just add that 75 to it and go for the whole thing next year.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense to me simply because this also is...
We're talking different kind of lighting, but it's still lighting.
Yep. Correct. And the contract portion of the installation can be bid and done. The purchase of the lights is going to be separate because we are set up right now with Musco lighting and they are designed to fit. It's a sole source, basically. But the Kiwanis and the basketball court, that's still open. It's just the ball field lighting portion of it that we would purchase, and then the contract would be the additional lighting and installation.
And once you hire the electrical contractor, he can install all of them and do all the electrical one bid. You won't have four bids out there trying to get it put together.
Yeah, I'm for that. I'm for putting it in the budget. Add what we think is a reasonable amount for Kiwanis. It could be under a separate capital item thing.
It is. We went through it today. Jay and Stan and the police department met, and I contributed, but we all met and talked about all the security lighting and the cameras. The council asked for it at the last retreat, and all of that is now in the budget. And we'll talk about that in committee, and that will then come to the full council.
Because we still have an opportunity. If bids come in and they're ridiculously higher than these amounts, we have still the opportunity not to spend the budgeted money.
Right. And these projects, especially the ball field, will be very early spring or very late fall, not in the middle of the season.
So it makes some sense to bunch them all together and put them in the in the 2010 budget.
Yeah, because it's going to be fairly complicated, not complicated, but entailed bid process for this, lining, making sure everything is correct.
Right.
And we would like that time to do so.
So if council is okay with that, we will, that's the way we'll do that. We will bunch it, Kiwanis, and all the lighting projects together and see if we can't save some money.
Correct. Thank you.
Item number six, extraterritorial utility agreements for sewer services.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Several sewer utility agreements were entered into in 1983 and 1984 and 1985, and these agreements at the time were a smaller version of what we have now as the extraterritorial agreements, but they did have a term of 25 years. There was a clause in there that there was, it did run with the property, so the property sold, you know, the sewer agreement went with the new property owner. So several of these five have expired. In your packets, we presented five new extraterritorial agreements for sewer services only for those that are expiring. These properties are all on a community well known as the Meadow Lane Water Association. This is located out on Cunningham Road. So town is over here, you go out on Cunningham Road, and this is Meadow Lane Water Association. The five that are expiring are these that are highlighted in yellow. The Water Association has their own water well. The ones that have came to the council and asked to go on the city sewer is because their sewer systems were failing at the same time, or at some time. And not everybody out on the Water Association has connected to the city sewer line. The sewer line goes down the right-of-way in Cunningham and then goes out to our sewer lagoon system out that way. Lots 13 through 25 connected to the city sewer in 2001 and 2002. The properties are now owned by William Field, Ramiro Gomez, John Hayes, David Martinez, and Juan Saceda Jr. These homes have been connected to the city sewer system for 25 years already, so there's no new impact to the city sewer system. The engineer's estimate for a normal household is 120 gallons of discharge into the sewer system per day per person. The rates that they've been paying recently is outside city, as outside city customers, is $29.52 per residential unit and $27.26 per each additional residential unit. The first home, David Martinez, that property does have two homes on that, and that's how he is being charged for two units. So in your packets, you have five separate agreements. Staff recommends that council approve the new extraterritorial agreements for sewer services. We do recommend that a motion and a vote be considered on each one. So like the first one would be with William Field to continue the sewer services. And then have a motion and a second and vote on each
with
one
each
separately.
Individual property owner.
Yes, yes. We've met with all the property owners. They've already signed their extraterritorial agreements. You have copies of them in your packet. There's one that'll expire in 2011. That'll be brought to you at that time.
How many years is this agreement for this
forever.
Time?
Forever and ever.
That's why I ask this question.
Some of them came in and said, it was just like 2 years ago. No, it's 25 years ago. Well, they were just surprised.
So not everybody's on sewer there then?
Not everybody's on city sewer. These 13 through 25 or something, they all came on city sewer. There's a couple in here. There'll be one that'll expire in 2011. The other ones, they're using their own septics. They haven't filled. And in 84, one of the gentlemen's told me that there was just a good opportunity for them to connect. They were able to get into the right of way. They were able to do that. So it was a good timing for them.
Now, if this is a, there's no sunset clause in this agreement, and our sewer rates go up, is there an escalation clause in their agreement?
Their rates are imposed just as those ordinances.
And rates just like our rates?
Yes, and that's included in those agreements, yes.
Any more questions for Debbie?
So would it be easier just to write up a new one for everybody at the same time right now?
Well, all of these already have one. It's just going to be this one that expires in 2011.
They have contracts right now that are forever.
Yeah, they have the same, the new.
This just puts everybody on that line and the same.
Yeah, those that came on have the extraterritorial agreements like what we have now.
I would accept the motion to approve the extraterritorial agreements with William Field.
Make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the extraterritorial agreement for William Field. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I would accept the motion to accept the extraterritorial agreement for Romero Gomez.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept the territorial agreement for Romero Gomez. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I would accept the motion to accept the extraterritorial agreement for John Hayes.
I shall move.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. I would accept the motion to accept the extraterritorial agreement for David Martinez.
Make that motion.
Second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
I would accept the motion to approve the extraterritorial agreement for Juan Sauceda Jr.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number 7, bias online agreement.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of council. Our new software company, Bias, has an agreement, what they call it a gateway agreement, and it's for online services. The agreement is attached, and there's also a merchant application attached for the mayor's signature. And what this will give us is the ability to allow our utility customers to pay their bills online. And one of the things it will do for when somebody signs up to do online payments, there'll be a check mark in the utility billing system so that they won't get a hard copy bill. In other words, we won't have to mail out a bill anymore, pay the postage and send an extra envelope and do the extra things. Plus, they can, if we have a newsletter that we start sending out in the mail, they can also get the newsletter online as well. We've had a lot of inquiries about this in the 3 years I've been here, so this is a nice step forward. One of the other things, if you Exhibit A of the cost of the different services, at the very bottom is a credit card swipe, and I wondered what that meant. I thought it was like one of those machines when you go into a restaurant and it prints out your receipt. But all it is, it's just a credit card swipe that attaches to the side of the computer. And it's simply for swiping a card. The computer takes care of all the rest. They are basically making an online payment. So if somebody comes to the counter and currently they can't make a payment by credit card. They can only pay check or cash. This will allow them to pay by credit card. And we just simply swipe it. And then it goes into the online mode, and they're basically paying their payment online. So what we would do is we would get one of these card swipes for each of our computers. I don't know if you've noticed at the front counter, all of the activity for reseating was done over, if you're looking out at the foyer, it was all done on the right-hand side. We've mirrored that now on the left-hand side, so there's going to be two reseating stations. They'll have their own computers and monitors, and their drawers will be separate. It's a good internal control feature because the two drawers aren't sitting next to each other any longer, and so it's good for internal controls. It's also good when there's traffic piled up at the counter because the girls aren't like reaching over each other and trying to get into the reseating system. So that's a nice separation, and we're looking forward to getting that finished. The cabinetry's been done, and the guy that did the original cabinetry did this and matched the formica, and so it looks like it's been there forever, and they did a very good job. So this is our online agreements, and we're just asking council to give the mayor permission to sign these agreements tonight. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So this is different than a automatic deduct?
Yes.
People have to go and initialize the payment?
Yes, it is. This right. This would this is actually a credit card transaction, and there will be a fee associated with that. I mean, there are fees for each transaction. For instance, a credit card processing is 18 cents. The city will pay that, but the credit card company also has a 2 or 3% charge that they include as well. And I think if we looked at this in time, if the majority of our utility customers use this over time, that we might want to look at you know, building it into the rates or something to, but right now I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think it's going to start out probably very slowly and build over time.
So I assume pay utility bills online, you can do it from your house.
That's correct.
But you don't give a bank account number per se, you give a credit card number.
That's correct.
Okay.
Credit or debit cards, yes.
It's just an added service to the community.
Yes, it is.
So do you know how much you're going to be charging the citizens? Can I go out and tell somebody you can do this, but it'll cost you?
There is no surcharge.
3%.
There is no surcharge at this point. The cost of this will just be absorbed in the water utility, the sewer utility, the solid waste utility. It's not.
Well, and there will be a savings in labor. I mean, yeah. I would think that if people pay online, they're not going to. It should make a difference in your labor. I don't think at this point it's going to be a cost issue to the city. There might be a time when, like Mike says, when most of the community is doing it, that you're probably going to have to add a surcharge for that.
Build it into the rates.
So if I come in and say I'm going to do mine online, then they won't send me a hard copy? That's what it says here. Those making online payments, a hard copy bill will not be produced in mail.
If you choose to pay your utility bill this way every month, we can check a box. You can still get a hard copy in the mail if you want a hard copy. As a city, we would add, I think one of the first questions I would ask you is, do you still want to receive a hard copy in the mail? And if you tell me no, then there'll be a checkbox in your master file in the utility building. And we would put a check in that box, and it would no longer produce a hard copy bill. That would be at your choice, and you could choose either way.
That would be a saving to us then for mail outs, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought we had a discussion before, though, if we paid for those transactions, it was gifting. And that's why the county has to do it when you pay taxes with a credit card.
Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Zed.
Well, the decision is, are you going to make it so that it's part of the cost of collecting the payments, and everybody pays so that it's a charge to everybody no matter what system they use to pay? or are you going to create a special category? Before, we were talking about a few people using it, I think, here at City Hall. Now you're talking about a system that's available on a much bigger basis. But yes, I mean, the Attorney General's opinion, the Auditor's opinion came out when this was a relatively new concept, and if you were going to have a 4%, 5%, and probably not ever get bigger than that, and how many people use the service, then yes. Then if there's a, and in the early days, it was a, I don't know what, 15%, I mean, there was a significant charge to using it, so that was gifting. Well, now you're down to, what did I read, 18 cents a transaction?
The city pays 18 cents, and then I think the credit card company also charges like a 2 or 3%
charge. So, 20 for, so you've got a smaller charge on, but now you're going to have it over the internet. It's not going to be limited to those people who come to a specific station. You're not talking about giving some special privilege to a few people. You're talking about everybody can use it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But wasn't that the same all the time? I mean, it's been the same all the time. If you have merchant services, Jim, it's merchant services. It's always been that way.
Right, but the first proposals dealt with a very, it was going to deal with a small group of people. The concern from the auditor was that it was a cost that was going to benefit a substantial minority of your customers, not be probably used by as many as 50% or more of your customers. That's where the auditor's concern came from, was that it was a gift to a small percentage. But if you're going to open it up so that potentially everyone could use it, it's just part of the cost of doing business.
Merchant services was always opened for everybody to use. It wasn't a select few, it was for everybody. This is my third time bringing this up.
Right, I know we have here, but I'm just saying the auditor's letter that questioned it as gifting assumed it was going to be a service offered to a substantial minority of your customers so that they would be getting a benefit everybody else couldn't get.
So do we know the total? What would you be paying, Mike, at all?
Pardon me?
Do you have any idea what the cost would be?
It would depend on so many things. It depended on how many people use the service, of course, and then the credit card companies, and their charges vary a little bit from credit card to credit card. So.
And then you have to offset that with postage that's being saved, or maybe labor that's being not being spent.
Printing bills, sending envelopes, and handling all of that as well. But it isn't a cost that I can come up with and say it's going to cost exactly 25 cents because I don't know that cost.
Yes, but as a business operating this way, you will get a bill from Visa every month that you have to pay. The city has to pay.
That's correct.
It'll be between 2 and 3%, and the big variable is how many people will use the Visa versus cash or check.
That's correct. And then we keep council informed about how that's moving along, and we would look at that as part of our rate study and build it into our rates.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, if everybody did it and the credit card is 3%, you could lose 3% off your water revenue.
Right, and the other thing that the study will tell you over time is, does it turn out to be 5 or 10% of your customers? At which point, then you know the amount to impose a surcharge on those folks because it has turned out to be what the auditor was afraid of.
Right.
If it turns out to be 50-60% of your customers, well then you know you need to raise the rate to cover the cost of the transaction.
Gotcha.
Now are these fees, have you checked with other people on these fees? I know where we're at, we've checked. It's just amazing the different fee structures you can get. We're on, like you guys were online, we swipe a card on the side of our computer, and it's online. And I know on ours, the more information we put in, the cheaper the fee is. That's how it works. We put their zip code down for the card. so they drops can, the fee down, so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, that's true. That's
we're how actually, we're having a training class on this on the 20th of this month. Actually, we're closing down the office for the first half of the day so that everybody in the office can get exposed to this. And that's when we're gonna learn all of the real detailed in and outs about it. We need this in place to do the training because they will do the training on our new system. In other words, we sign up for this gateway by this agreement, and once we sign up, then we have access to gateway, and we need that for the training class. The answer to a lot of your questions will no doubt come out of that training class, and I'll definitely keep council informed about what those answers are. I don't want to sound vague, but it is kind of vague.
And to do this study, we need to implement. It is, like I say, it is an added service to our yes. community. And you will know after the first month or two or three, I mean, is it catching on or more people doing it? And you'll have more of a handle on what it is or isn't costing you to do this.
Right.
And then the council can address that surcharge. Yeah.
And one thing we can do, because we now have our own folding and stuffing machine, we can add a flyer, an 8.5 by 11 flyer in that folding stuffing thing. So when we send out our utility bills, we can send out the flyer announcing that we now have this online system and let them know how they can access it, et cetera.
Chairman?
Go ahead.
Could we go ahead and pass this and say put a 6 months limit on this and then come back and revisit it? I mean, that way we'd know in 6 months' time what the issue is and how much money we're losing or gaining or where we're at, and then we can go from there.
I think it's very, very important that this is so new that I keep council informed on everything we're doing, and I'll make every effort to do that. So it won't sneak up on anybody and come as a surprise that something isn't working or something like that. I'll keep you well informed on that.
So on this fee structure, after a while, do you have the ability to look at other suppliers of the fee structure, let's say? Or do you have to stick with
whatever we're doing here, gateway, whatever you call it? But
we're initially signing up. We're signing a 36-month agreement with this, and we can opt out of the agreement with notice, with a certain amount of notice. And I don't remember what that is exactly. If we decided to do it with somebody else or go in a different direction, the beauty of this thing right here is that it talks to our software, and of course that's important to us. You know, we don't have to get somebody to come in here and redesign the wheel. This works with our software. Our software company is heading all of this up, and so that's why we're going in this direction.
It's a 90-day termination notice in the agreement.
Right. And
I was just wondering, because I know for us when we started looking around, it was amazing how much we could save by supplying more information every card.
And sometimes I think that's good too, because if these people want to keep our business, it could force them into competing at those prices as well. So that isn't a bad idea. That is a very good idea.
And I think, as Ken mentioned, if we can revisit this in 6 months, we can discuss all this, maybe what their rates are, what it's costing us, if we're going to have to charge a surcharge, and compare with maybe other companies out there at that time.
I agree.
But at this point, we need to approve this agreement here so that you can go to the.
Right, there's two agreements here. One is the Gateway and Administration Service Agreement. The other is a Merchant Application Agreement.
I would accept a motion to approve the BIAS Software Gateway Administrative Service Agreement and the Merchant. Okay, that's the first one, right?
Right, the first one, yes. Right.
I'd make that motion.
As presented.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the BIAS Software Gateway Administrative Service Agreement. Discussion?
So Mike, this was the only company you looked at, right? Just because they're connected with our software?
Yes, right. Our software company brought this to us. That's correct.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
That's you.
Is that me?
His paper was on the mic.
Oh.
Just wanted to get your attention.
This time I'd like a motion to approve the merchant application agreement for online payments. As presented.
Make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the merchant application agreement for online payments. Discussion?
Can we add somewhere in there about a 6 months revisit clause or something, or is that gonna have to just be between us?
Well, I think as long as everyone knows that it's gonna come back March, February, March of next year, and I think Mike will probably keep us informed on a monthly basis once we get started here. It may even be sooner than 6 months. I mean, if he can see a need for it.
In fact, I put in my monthly report, talk about how much it's being used and what the charges are, and just so you have a picture of it every month, in fact.
Is that okay?
Yep.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 8, resolution to reduce release retainage for the 2009 overlay and sports project.
Good evening. We talked about the street and overlay sport court project earlier this evening. This project was completed and accepted by council in August 10th of 2009. We're currently holding a little over $24,000 retainage on this project. All requirements of the state have been met by the contractor, and we are asking council to release the retainage on this project at this time. Does anybody have any questions?
Everything is done to your satisfaction? And
yes, it is.
No major change orders and all that good stuff? Though?
Exactly.
It's already done.
Actually, just a little information on that right now. The coating on the tennis courts caused that contractor way more work than he had anticipated, but it was bid as a lump sum item. And so that became between the main contractor and the subcontractor. We were tied in as a lump sum, and we did well.
Do we have a motion?
I so move that we pay the retainage.
Then moved and seconded that we release the retainage for the overlay projects. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number 9, resolution to surplus equipment.
Both Public Works and the Police Department have come across some items that we would like to surplus. I'm going to speak for the chief on this one. Is a 2004 Victoria, the old police car, basically. And this item is to be transferred to Booker Auctions and to be auctioned off on November 7th of 2009. And then also, Public Works has a snowplow that used to go on the front of large dump trucks that we haven't used in years and years and years, and we would like to surplus that piece of equipment and send it out to a sealed bid. The third item on there is a quantity of 10 bicycles from the police surplus, and there was a request be made that the bicycles be donated to our sister city, and they'd be shipped in a container and be put in at this time. Those are the three items that we would like to declare surplus.
I'd entertain a motion to accept the surplus equipment as presented.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Item number 10, unfinished business.
I have one. As we break off in our committees and discuss the budget, specific to salary and wages, I would like to enter this for your consideration. This refers to Oregon's minimum wage, but there was the exact same article for the Washington State minimum wage. Labor commissioner, the guy's name, that Oregon's minimum wage workers won't be getting a raise next year. Oregon voters approved a 2002 ballot measure to raise the minimum wage and then tie it to the consumer price index, a measure of U.S. inflation. The wage gets recalculated every September. They said the CPI declined 1.5% between August 2008 and August 2009, so Oregon's minimum wage will remain $8.40 an hour. And they said the same thing for Washington. So our workers getting minimum wages are getting no increase because they're tied to the CPI, which actually did not go up. So I just take that for what it's worth. And some decisions in our budget aren't always popular, but.
So are you saying our CPI didn't go up, Mark?
That's according to the, I don't know if we tie ours to the U.S. or if there's a Washington State one, but according to this, the U.S. one actually declined 1.5%.
Our union, our CBA's collective bargaining agreements are tied to the all cities west, which was minus 1.19. 1.9.
So our union negotiation or our union workers are getting no raise?
No. Recall the 3-year agreement that we have that expires next year. All four of our union agreements expire next year. Three of them with the Teamsters have a 5% automatic increase for 2010. After that, it's to be negotiated. The operating engineers have a range of 3% to 5%. And because it's lower than 3%, the operating engineers will get 3% by the CPA agreement that the council approved.
How many minimum wage employees does the city have?
I don't know if we have any.
I don't think we have any.
Yeah, except the, maybe the pool employees.
The point is, if people on minimum wage aren't getting an increase, people making three times that don't need an increase.
Well, but we have to negotiate
contracts
these contracts.
There. You can't
we have
you can't
to negotiate these contracts multiple year.
And we'll do all four of them next year.
Well, it doesn't just apply to contractual employees, was my point.
Any other new business or unfinished business? New business. I got some announcements here. Mayor's Luncheon at the Senior Center Wednesday, October 14th. Council members, welcome to come.
At 12 o'clock?
12 o'clock. Budget committee meetings, call Marcy if you need the schedule on your particular committee. I know we changed a couple of times to a little later to accommodate Eleanor.
Right.
If there's any questions, call her. She'll let you know what the times are. Fall cleanup is November 14th, Saturday only, for yard vegetation only. Drop off at Broadway location, 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. The old hotel auction is Saturday at Evergreen Implement, starting at?
6.
6 o'clock?
I think it's 6, yeah.
Sure. Okay. Our natural gas meeting is 10 a.m. here at City Hall, October 28th. That's That's interesting. I think everybody that can attend should attend. I would like to, for council to maybe convene to executive session to update the council on possible real estate acquisition. So at this time, I would like to go to an executive session lasting no more than 15 minutes.
I'll be right back.